Welcome on in, everybody, to this edition of Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Sorry for the delay on this one. Obviously, I had a big weekend for myself. It was my wedding anniversary, so I was away this weekend. So that's why we didn't get a result on Sunday morning of the Poirier versus Hooker fight. I did watch it live. It was the last thing I did on my honeymoon, and I'm sure you guys can make the jokes about how lame that is as it is. Is that it wasn't even my honeymoon, my anniversary, excuse me. That the last thing that I did was watch two men in a cage in their underwear fight while my wife slept on my side. But we did have a fantastic time. It was a great time. Did a lot of improvisation because we were supposed to be off on a cruise in the Bahamas and, you know, reliving our honeymoon, if you will. But it was, pandemic is what it is. We kind of kept it local, staycation style, and had a really good time, but wanted to get a recap in on this one because I thought this was an important one to get a recap on. One, I love watching Dustin Poirier fight. That dude's absolutely fantastic. And second of all, it was a bona fide fight of the year candidate. Him versus Dan Hooker was absolutely amazing. And I said last week that I don't pick against Dustin Poirier, that I'm very biased about when it comes to that. I love his coach, Dyad Davis, friend of mine, think the world of him. I think those two as a tandem, as good as it gets in the sport. Everybody talks about, some of the chemistry that people have over the span of mixed martial arts. I think that, Poirier and Dyad Davis, as far as striking is concerned, is as good as it gets. It really is. And, you think about in fights like this with Dan Hooker and how many Dustin has had like this where they're all just storms of chaos. And we'll get into the nitty gritty of the fight in just a second because it was fantastic. But these types of fights speak to Dustin Poirier. He is the bane of slugfests. He is born in the chaos. I talked to him about this probably last August. I talked to him at American Top Team about this before he fought Khabib. And that, he just embraces that he embraces the chaos. And it just seems as the crazier the fights get, the better he is. I don't know what it is. I don't know how he can remain so damn calm, how he can remain so poised in the craziest types of fights. Now, just put it in perspective for you guys. These are the people that he's beaten and have just been hellacious, hellacious fights. You're talking about Max Holloway, maybe the greatest featherweight of all time, one of the greatest volume punchers of all time. Eddie Alvarez, the only man to hold a Bellator championship and a UFC championship. Justin Gaethje is now where Dustin was as interim lightweight champion of the world with a chance to fight on Khabib Nurmagomedov. He beat him, outviolenced what everybody seems to think is the most violent individual in the sport of Justin Gaethje, a guy who out-savaged Tony Ferguson. He stopped him and out-savaged him. Like that is the type of animal we were talking about here with Dustin Poirier. So while the Dan Hooker fight started off and it looked bad, like, he was getting, thwapped with leg kicks consistently. Dan was pouring on a lot of volume. There were just still those heavy shots, even in the midst of all of those shots landing for Dan Hooker early on in the bout. Dustin was out there and he was still hitting him with heavy bombs up against the cage. And just showing him, you're not going to out-tough me. And how that didn't already put something in Dan Hooker's mind as we were going into round two. Round two happens, and maybe you'd be hard-pressed to find a lot of rounds better in the sport than that between Dustin Poirier and Dan Hooker. The back and forth those two had. Dustin came out guns blazing. Dan Hooker put it back on him, started implementing the knees into it. Very close round. I remember watching it. I was like, I want to give that one to Dustin. I want it to be 1-1, but I know that's the fan in me talking. Like there was part of me that was saying it. So I thought that we had an absolute classic here and that we were having a razor thin fight here, but it was still 2-0 Dan Hooker going into it. But man, if you are Dan Hooker and you are, a man who is on the come up, and this is supposed to be your coming out party. You're 30 years old, and you're taking on you're taking on Dustin Poirier. This is your second real war, as he had one with Paul Felder. But there's no fans cheering you on. There's no hometown crowd behind you. You could start to see that Dan Hooker's will was starting to break. You could see that it was starting to go a little bit. The point of it being is he started trying to take Dustin down and was succeeding in taking Dustin down. Now, he wasn't really doing much with it because you don't go into these fights thinking, oh, Dan Hooker's going to take him down. Like, that's not, you know, we didn't go into this thinking that. And so you have Dustin Poirier in a spot where he's going for submissions. He's going to look to end the fight. He's hitting him from the bottom with vicious elbows. He's got him cut open, something nasty. Dan Hooker's looking real bad. Dustin's looking no first prize himself. And then the fight the fight's starting to wane on. Dustin gets him up against the cage at one point. Really looked like the fight could have been stopped. I mean, it's a credit to Dan Hooker that he was able to get through that, but it looked like, Dustin was going to finish it up. And I think that if he hadn't already gone through two rounds of hell early on in the fight, that we would have been in a spot where, yeah, he probably is finishing him off. But you got to remind that this is not only a question of Dustin Poirier going out there and he's trying to finish the fight, but he's also trying to survive himself. And so, yeah, it really was getting brutal by round four. That was a bludgeoning by Poirier. One judge had it a 10-8, and we got to the final bell. Poirier again, round five. It just didn't seem like Dan Hooker had really much of anything left. And it was crazy because there was a point where you were looking at, and Dan Dominic Cruz talked about this back in round two, where you're like, there's 3 minutes left in round two, and this is a five-round fight. How is this going to continue? And it wasn't really possible for Dan Hooker to put what he put out on Dustin Poirier and keep going. He's just not used to that. Poirier is. Like, Poirier has been in there with guys where he is getting in, and the fights seem crazy, and they seem like the guy who's just dishing out is just dishing out, maybe not as much, but he's dishing out maybe the stronger blows, and eventually that's going to add up over a 5-round fight. And that's what it is, man. And his ability to get these shots and his accuracy in what they're like, these fist tsunamis that he's in there with. You marvel at it when you watch it. You're just like, how? And you feel like he's taking these shots because everybody looks at, I just don't think that this dude gets the credit that he deserves, And I said this leading up to the times where it was, he finally got his shot against Khabib, where he was like, 25 minutes to make life fair, that whole thing. Because, you think about a guy who back, 6 years ago was knocked out by Conor McGregor at featherweight and, has had two losses since then. One was a freak knockout loss to Michael Johnson that he ran into, and the other one is to maybe the best lightweight of all time. That's crazy. And then you go and you look at the lineage of guys that he's beaten, the current interim lightweight champion of the world, the former lightweight he's beaten three former lightweight champions of the world, one former featherweight champion of the world. That's insane, man. That's an insane resume for DP. It really is. And all the props to him, man. I really, really marveled at him yesterday. A lot of the questions were, what's next? What's next for Dustin Poirier? This is what my answer is for that. Whatever the hell he wants to be next, honestly. Because I feel like with the continuous great fights that he's gone on there for, and you're talking about, you want to talk about exciting fighters, right? This dude has been fight of the night one. He's had, let's say, since his Michael Johnson loss in 2016, he's had 8 fights. He's had 5 fight of the nights in 8 fights. 5 Fight of the Nights in 8 fights. Probably should have been 6 if Eddie Alvarez didn't illegally knee him. He also has a performance of the night bonus in that, so he has 6 bonuses over that case. He obviously has the one loss to Khabib. So out of his 7 wins in his last 8 fights, 6 of them have had bonuses. That's so crazy. So, and one of them was a no contest, not by his fault. The dude's a stud. I mean, he's box office every time that he steps into the octagon. So what is next for him? You know, everybody goes to the mouth of mixed martial arts, Ariel Helwani, and Ariel goes, he says, Poirier versus Tony Ferguson. Who says no? And if I'm Poirier, I'm like, I'm saying no. Why do I got to fight Tony? Let me ask you something. Let's talk about what's down the pipe, okay? Legitimately, this is what's going to happen, all right? Nurmagomedov and Gaethje are going to fight in September for the undisputed lightweight champion of the world. If Khabib wins, he's not fighting Tony Ferguson. He's not fighting Dustin Poirier. He's not fighting anybody other than Conor McGregor. That's that. I don't think Conor's going to fight Dustin. I don't think Conor's going to fight Tony. I think he's going to sit and wait until September, this whole season of McGregor thing. The damage is done, my friend. It's not going to happen. So for Poirier, you're going to say, you're in this position right now, right? And you're like, oh, we'll go fight Tony. All right, I guess if he wants a paycheck, go fight Tony. Fine. But here's the thing. What if Gaethje wins the lightweight championship of the world? What if he wins? Because a lot of this stuff is based upon who wears the crown. And who is the guy at the top? Oh, I think a big reason why Conor doesn't want to fight Dustin Poirier is like, how could I do better? Why would I want to fight Dustin Poirier again? He's clearly gotten a lot better. He's clearly better at 155 pounds. Why in God's green earth would I want to fight that guy that I knocked out in the first round 4 years ago? Why would I want to try and do better than that? I probably won't. If you're Dustin Poirier, you're thinking to yourself, hold on a second. I am one of the best lightweights on the planet. I've had 6 fight of the nights in my last 8 fights. And the interim lightweight champion of the world, the guy that everybody dubs the most violent man in UFC, I stopped that guy. And he has a good chance to go beat Nurmagomedov. If he beats Khabib, who has a better argument at the championship than Dustin Poirier? Conor's win is over Donald Cerrone. Okay. That's no bueno. That's like, you know, Donald is looking quite over the hill right now. No disrespect. You know, he's a legend. I love him. Tony Ferguson's coming off a loss. Khabib would be coming off a loss. So if I'm looking up and down the top 4 right now, and I'm trying to figure out who's next in line. If Khabib wins, yeah. You don't go to Dustin because he beat Dustin. I understand that. Why would Nurmagomedov want to fight Dustin Poirier again? And it's not the box office that Conor is. So I know for all you smartasses who are going to hit me with that, save it for me. But if you are Khabib, okay, you're not going to fight Dustin again. But if you're Justin Gaethje, who, by the way, was very, 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 what's the word I'm looking for? Very supportive, giving a lot of love, giving a lot of appreciation to Poirier and Dan Hooker yesterday, saying these guys show that they want to be in the championship picture. If you're Justin Gaethje and you're on the top, you know, everybody's going to go there and they're going to say, oh, well, what's next? It's Conor. Is it Conor? If Justin Gaethje wins the championship, if he's the undisputed lightweight champion of the world, Conor McGregor deserves a championship fight over Dustin Poirier? Why? Because he knocked him out in a different weight class half a decade ago? I mean, look at the murderer's row that Dustin Poirier has won over his span where Conor was out there boxing and, you know, getting arrested and all that type of stuff. Look at what this guy's put on paper. What he's put in the ring with blood, sweat, and tears. And if he were to have a win over the current lightweight champion of the world, you're telling me that guy doesn't deserve another crack at the title? In what weight class does that happen? where a guy has this kind of resume at a weight class, loses to the champion, comes back, has the fight of the year against a top five opponent who you guys were looking to usher into the title picture, and he said, no, no. Who doesn't get a title shot off of that when he has a win over the champ? He's got a very good argument. So when you ask what's next for Dustin Poirier, here's what I would do. I would sit on my ass. I would recover. I just had a year where I had the longest layoff in my career. I had hip surgery. I had a lot of you know, unknowns about when you were going to be back in action. You know, I would rest up and I would watch where the pieces fall. Go out and fight Tony Ferguson. Why? Tony's coming off a loss. He lost to Gaethje. I beat Gaethje. Why do I have to go beat Tony Ferguson if I'm Dustin Poirier? That's stupid. All respect to Tony. You know I love him. Look, all these guys in 155, there's not a one among them I don't love watching the fight. That's why it's the best division in the sport. But get the hell out of here. You think I need... Now, if you got to go... You know, if Khabib is champion and you go beat Tony and that's what gets you back, okay, we have that talk. If Khabib is champion again, then you could talk about going to fight Tony Ferguson. But if I'm Poirier, I'm not going out there and I'm not gonna sit there and possibly lose a fight when I'm a Justin Gaethje win away from having a win over the reigning champ and having a better championship contender argument than anybody else in the division. Hell no. No way. So what's Dustin Poirier going to do next? I hope we don't know a thing about it up until September when we find out who is the reigning lightweight champion of the world. If it's Khabib, then you talk about going to fight Tony Ferguson or trying to wiggle your way into a Conor McGregor fight. You know, then you have those talks, you have that stress. But if you're talking about trying to be champion of the world and, you know, you're a result away from having a win over the reigning champ, I'm waiting that out, man. You know, I mean, look, if Conor McGregor does come a knocking, if he won't do it. But if he does, obviously you take the Conor fight. It's life-changing money and stuff like that. And I'm sure, you know, Dustin Poirier, who's got a beautiful family, I'm sure is just like, all right. And I'm sure you'd be like, yes, I finally got that opportunity to get him. But the idea of fighting Tony Ferguson, I don't know, man. I'm just, if anybody has to go fight Tony, in my mind, it's Conor. Because Conor's resume, his last win, although very impressive in beating Cowboy with shoulder strikes, very impressive. In my mind, the resume needs a little bit more polishing. He probably doesn't because of the star that he is. But I'm just saying, if anybody has to fight Tony to prove themselves title worthy, Dustin or Conor. Right now it's Conor. If Khabib wins, then Dustin, you know, you could talk about the Ferguson fight. But if Gaethje wins, dude, I got to win over Gaethje. What the hell do I need to go fight? Go fight Tony Ferguson for? That's stupid. Jeez. Sweaty in the studio today. Anyway, shout out to Dustin Poirier. Shout out to my guy Dia Davis for getting a win too, man. Boca Boxing District. Stand up. Good for them. Other results from this. What do we got from this one? We got Mike Perry. He got a win over Mickey Gall. He won via unanimous decision, 29-28. Pretty easy fight to score. Mike Perry got himself a win with his girlfriend in his corner. That's the story. I watched a lot of Mike Perry interviews this week. That dude was on one. I don't disagree with all that he's saying as far as, like, you know, the taking advantage of, he feels like the coaches take advantage, the people around you as fighters take advantage. I can jive with all that because I think that does happen with fighters a lot. I think it happens a ton with fighters. He was talking about afterwards where he's just like, he's got to work out some tax. I guess he's very in trouble with the tax man. So he's got to figure that out. But look, you know, Mike Perry, he got an entertaining fight. He's an entertaining personality, you know, that goes a long way. It was a much needed win for him for sure, because that record was definitely looking dicey from where it was. So, you know, good for him. I think that the girlfriend, you know, it's the thing that's interesting. He says he wants to go train with Yoel Romero, that he wants to move up to 185, seemingly for a showdown with Darren Till. So, you know, Mike Perry might be our neighbor soon. It sounds like he's coming down to Miami. He's going to fight with Yoel down at his camp with Yuli Diaz. And I think that we're going to see a lot of Mike Perry down here in South Florida, which is, look, Mike, it's a great place for people to come when you're running away from taxes. I know you've been in Florida anyway, but South Florida's got a different kind of vibe to it. So we welcome you, sir. We welcome you with open arms. Welcome to South Florida from Mike Perry. So good for him. Maurice Greene, he got a submission win, arm triangle choke over Jan Vellante. Awesome moment for him. He's like crying. He's bawling his eyes out. I dare you not to get choked up watching Maurice Greene's interview with John Anik afterwards. Brendan Allen over Kyle Daukaus. Somebody had it 30-27. I didn't see that. The scores were all over 29-28, 29-27, 30-27. They were all over the place. I thought 29-28 for Brendan Allen was the place to have it. Takashi Sato got a win over Jason Witt. Easy TKO. Quick fight. I was actually walking back from City Place with my wife. We stopped to get a milkshake. They had the fights on. I saw Bruce Buffer. I pay the man for our milkshakes. I turn around and Sato is already victorious. So that was a quick one. Just caught it on the replay for full disclosure there. Let's see. Kama Worthy got a win over Luis Pena. He won via submission. I watched that fight. We were watching that fight in the hotel room. That was actually the last fight my wife and I. I tell you what, man, I was more attracted by it. She was sitting there. She was watching the fights with me. My wife, she just, people think, oh, does your wife love sports? No. No. No, she doesn't. She doesn't love sports at all. She'll be into stories. She likes stories. You know what she likes? Well, she likes watching real sports. She'll be into sports documentaries. I can get her into those, but watching sports? No. But she was actually watching. She was like, sitting there watching Luis Pena versus Kama Worthy. She liked the guy's nickname, Violent Bob Ross. So we were watching this a little bit. And I thought Luis Pena technically was looking good in a lot of spots. But just from my fat ass watching on television, just looked like Kama was way too strong for him. And really, Luis, who was in good positions with stuff, just couldn't get the muscle on him to put him away. So that looked like his big issue with that. Obviously for Violent Bob Ross, he's another one of those young fighters who's, I think, got a nice little profile as far as his career is concerned, since coming on the scene. But, he's got 500 record now, so got a lot of work to do, but he's been working at American Top Team. He's in good hands there. We'll see what happens with Violent Bob Ross. And Kama Worthy's coming on here, and he's basically been the showstopper for his first two fights. He's come on the scene, and everybody's like, he's supposed to go in there, and he's supposed to lose, and he has not. He's come out victorious now in a couple fights in a row, where you've had his win over Devontae Smith, which was back in August, and now this one over Pena. So really, really fun night of fights. Dustin Poirier, shout out. Dan Hooker, shout out. Awesome show by you boys. And as for Dan Hooker, I guess, all I want to say in regards to him is that dude is fun. He is a fun fighter. I do think that he definitely has the potential to do big things in this division. I don't want to say yet that I think Dan Hooker is a championship-worthy fighter as of yet. I still think that there's still some polishing off that has to go there. But I do think that he is very exciting and that he is, like many in this division, a lot of fun to watch. So really, really enjoy that night of fights, everybody. Thank you for watching our recap. Get to the rest of the show here on the podcast right after this. And have a great week, everybody. Good Sunday morning, everybody. Welcome on in. It's Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Hope everybody's having a fantastic weekend. Let's take a little bit to dive all over the world of mixed martial arts and boxing. Got a great interview coming up today with the Magic Man, Antonio Tarver. He's got some new responsibilities, new hat put on as he is diving into the world of training. And he's going to be training local undefeated welterweight Harold Calderon. He has also been actually training down here Evander Holyfield with a little side of Vladimir Klitschko, but mostly Holyfield, as he's been doing some stuff with the Heavyweight Factory. So we'll talk to Antonio Tarver about that. I think you guys will really enjoy that conversation. He's always one of my favorite boxing guests to have. And so looking forward to that. This week in the world of UFC, we like to call this as the disgruntled star turns. We had some updates. We got to finally hear from Jorge Masvidal as he did an Instagram live where you guys can go see all of his clips now. He's posted them on YouTube, which is a fantastic, by the way, that's a money way to go get views for him. Is like, you do the Instagram live, then you chop it all up. You're doing half the work. This guy working smarter, not harder. But yeah, did an Instagram live. I want to say it was Wednesday, maybe it was Tuesday, I forget. But he addressed the pay thing. You know, mostly was upset about the comments that Dana White made last week, where Dana said that it's an opportunity, not a career. And obviously, for somebody like Masvidal, that's got to be an annoying thing to hear when you've been doing it for 16 years. That's a career, man. The 2 decades, you make it almost 2 decades doing something. That's a career. You've made a living. You've been able to keep the lights on, pay your bills, take care of your family for 2 years, for 16 years, you know, getting punched in the face, punching people in the face, all that type of stuff. So was most upset about that, you know, said that he was going to fight in 2020, but, you know, they're just in a standoff right now. And I think if you're Jorge Masvidal right now, the big thing that you got to hope for is that this fight island bombs. Like, that's got to be the big hope for him, is that come July 11th, I think it is, UFC 251, Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns, and Volkanovski versus Max Holloway, and Petr Yan against Jose Aldo, all those fights. You got to hope that card's a real stinker. You know, not only you got to hope that it's not only a real stinker, but you got to hope that nobody buys it. And I don't think it's going to be a big blockbuster fight. You know, I was talking to Lex McMahon from Titan FC this week, as, you know, they had their card this weekend. And, you know, he was like, it's not a big money fight. It's the fight. It's the guy that said yes. And this is a guy who's very close to both of those guys in the main event. He loves them both to death. But, you know, he was saying, like, you know, it's probably even a shake for Kamaru, because he thought that, you know, fighting Jorge Masvidal was going to be big money. You know, he doesn't like Jorge Masvidal, that's for sure, but he's got to recognize what kind of a draw the guy has been, especially after the year that he had in 2019, and the fact that he had that type of a year and that we're at this point is kind of disappointing. So it's one of those things where, you know, I can understand why Masvidal is quite annoyed from a comment like that. But yeah, man, these stories are coming out left and right as far as the fighter pay is concerned. Now, look, the funny thing that's interesting about this is we haven't really gotten to the point, because it's not the first time we've had fighter pay issues, but it's definitely, I believe, the first time that we've had the most famous names all have stories putting their name to why they're upset about their pay. Paige VanZant this week told Ariel Helwani that she made more money from Dancing with the Stars than her entire UFC career. But I will say with Paige, you know, part of the reason she's getting Dancing with the Stars is because she's in the UFC. You know, the fact that she is a fighter in the UFC, these doors do open to her. Does she have as many Instagram followers? Does she have this crazy fan base? I don't know. She has been a monster ratings hit, though. That can't be denied. People do care about watching her, do turn in to watch her. Even though I wouldn't go out on a limb and say Paige is an elite fighter, I would say that she's probably taken the opportunity of the UFC and marketed that into something better than maybe anybody else on the roster, honestly. So you had that story come out this week. I know Sugar Sean O'Malley, he was on Food Truck Diaries with Brendan Schaub, and he had said that he made only $3,000 off of what was $1 million in sales with the Reebok deal. I mean, the Reebok, that's an OG. You want to talk about an OG money issue? It was the Reebok deal, which I think does come up this week. But holy hell, that was, I mean, really, that was the first time I really remember fighter pay being an issue, because a lot of the times a big reason why these guys could keep their, you know, the UFC kept the salaries down. Maybe wasn't what boxing was, but their sponsorships, guys could put whatever they basically wanted on their shorts, and they were still making a ton of cash. So, you know, that also came out. I think the most fascinating one, though, came from John Jones, who told Steve-O, yep, a lot of scoops coming out. He told Steve-O this week, he says, I don't want to fight soon. I have no interest in fighting the UFC until I get paid what I believe I'm worth. If I have a bad relationship with Dana White, sit out for 2 years, 3 years, bring light to what's happening, then things are, then these are the things that people remember you more for than winning belts. I stood for the younger fighters. Okay. Well, that's an interesting twist to put on it for John. Like, does he care about the younger fighters? Like, if, like, you know, because if Dana White did do a one-off or let him go fight Mike Tyson or any of that stuff, would he make some grandstand and would it trickle down? I don't know. I mean, Conor McGregor got to go fight Floyd Mayweather. Conor McGregor got these big paydays, and, you know, we're still dealing with these issues, and the money has gotten bigger. It has gotten bigger. Now, it's not where it should be, but it has gotten bigger. So, you know, I guess let's go to the idea, though, that John, forget about John standing for the younger fighters, because, you know, usually a lot of what he says had some insincerity to it. The idea that he sits out for 2-3 years, would that help him in his cause to get a big-time fight? I don't know. Because I think that the thing we've all been waiting for is just John to go to heavyweight, win the heavyweight title. This seems like a as good a time as any. I understand. Who wants to fight Francis Ngannou on a terrible deal or a deal you don't deem fair? But will some big holdout really help him? I don't know. I think it could do a couple things. One, I don't think it hurts, because if he does go away, you get the chance to establish maybe somebody new at 205, whether that be Dominic Reyes. And if Dominic Reyes got the belt, Dom could really be, he could be in a different spot than Daniel Cormier was. Because one of the problems with John, with Daniel was, is that he never really got the credit that he thought he deserved for being the light heavyweight champion with John Jones inactive, even though, you know, it's not his fault that John Jones was inactive. So if we're at the spot with Dominic Reyes and he's able to go win the title, I think he's going to be in a different spot than Daniel Cormier was, because a lot of people thought that he beat John Jones. A lot of people thought that, you know, he was better than John Jones that night. And so I think that's going to help him a lot in building a case to get John back out of retirement, or to build a bigger fight, or just get a reign over a division, some new blood in there. I think that could help. But the other argument is, look, he's not Conor McGregor. He's not that kind of a draw to where people are going to be crazy for it. And a lot of times he's one of these guys who's a lot like Canelo Alvarez, in that he could be a big draw with the right matchup, which I think is why he does deserve FU money for a Francis Ngannou fight, because I do think that would be a monster, because you're talking about, you know, the GOAT taking on the scariest thing in the sport. So I do think that deserves a lot of dough. But I do think that if he were to go, I don't know that people would be clamoring for him. I don't think that's the case. Because his greatness hasn't necessarily equated to being this mainstream star like a Deontay Wilder, even though he's headlined more cards that have had success than Deontay Wilder or a lot of heavyweight boxers. He really has. But, you know, if you're going to compare it to what, like, the A1, the, you know, the Rondas, the Brocks, the McGregors, if you're going to compare it to that, no, he hasn't gotten to that other than probably the DC fights.
But he's been good. I mean, like, look, I think there's got to be some respect in being a solid draw and being a guy that has reigned for that long and has just been the best. He hasn't been, you know, he's not Demetrius Johnson, where it's been like, yeah, he's the greatest. He's maybe the greatest of all time, but he's got the worst numbers ever. But he's also not George St. Pierre. He's not on his greatness, has a nation behind him, and, you know, millions are always tuning in to watch GSP. He's not that either. He's a little bit more of a swing scale on that. So would John Jones leaving for a couple of years help his cause? To me, I don't think so. You know, I think that, you know, the best thing for John to do almost is I think the move is to like do something to like antagonize Francis. You know, like I think it's whatever Francis's next fight is, or if Francis is going to be at Stipe versus DC, I think it's almost like go there, sit in the crowd, you know, make it a W, you know, get the fans buzzing even more for that fight. That's what I think should happen. You know, when Jorge Masvidal versus Nate Diaz was recently made, it was so organic. You know, it was just like Nate Diaz called out Jorge Masvidal, and we all just bit for it, you know, immediately. We're just like, yes, that is the fight. And they had to make it. It took some hemming and hawing. You know, they were going to go with Colby versus Camaro, but eventually they're just like, F it. The fight that we need to make is Nate Diaz versus Jorge Masvidal. I think for John, the move here is you got to go poke the bear a little bit. And it may not be what he wants to do, because he may feel disrespected and he may feel like, why should I have to do that? I've been doing this for so long. I get you. But listen, in this case, you got to be the antagonist here, because Francis is the silent killer. He's the guy who doesn't say much, can't really promote too much. You know, you're going to be promoting on his physicality more so than his words. So the way Francis promotes a big fight is you show that damn highlight, that highlight reel. With John, it's got to be the words. It's got to be him versus UFC. It's got to be all that. Play the bad guy a little bit, and if not the bad guy, at least the guy who wants this challenge, the guy who wants this absolute monster, and to tackle him and to show that it's skill over brawn. It's mixed martial arts over brute strength, all that type of stuff. I think he could go a couple of ways here where he could actually be pretty beloved by the mixed martial arts fan, be the guy that the MMA fan is rooting for over Francis, because Francis is just the quintessential knockout artist. And with that being the case, I think it gets a lot of buzz behind it. I don't think sitting out does a lot for him. Look, John's done more sitting out than any UFC star. It hasn't helped with his popularity. It hasn't helped with his paychecks. If anything, it's probably hurt him. So, you know, I get it. He wants to put out there that he's going to stay strong and that he's not going to bend on this. Cool. That's understandable. But is it the best tactic to take? I don't know. I would get my ass to UFC 252, Stipe versus DC. You know Francis Ngannou is going to be there. I would be having the media talk about, you know, me versus Francis being the next era of heavyweight. And that is the route I would go if I was him and if I was his management team. I wouldn't be talking about this, you know, this crap about sitting out for 2 years. That's unfortunately for him. Like, look, if you were talking about a guy who never missed fights, a guy who just kind of went on forever, and I understand he's been doing it for a long time, but has had these pockets where we haven't seen him. We've kind of been the John. We've been down the road of I don't get to see John Jones. We've been down that road, and this isn't a story of redemption. This is like a story of, yeah, he's sitting out because he wants a big fat paycheck. You know, I think that's the way to go. You show up to that heavyweight championship fight, and you start getting people talking about you versus Francis. That's the way I'd go. Make it so the fans go crazy about it, and you can't be denied. We'll talk to the Magic Man, Antonio Tarver. We're back after this. Welcome back, everybody. It is Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. I always love talking to this guy. I love talking boxing with this guy. I think he's a great personality. He's always fun to talk to. And it's funny, I got to see him a couple times recently in social media. He's been active on a different side of things. You know, Antonio Tarver's been training folks. He's been training his son for a while, but if you've been watching on Instagram, I've been seeing him train Evander Holyfield. He's been hanging out with Holyfield and Klitschko. And this past week, I got pumped because I saw him with Harold Calderon, King Calderon, a big-time friend of the show, undefeated welterweight boxer from Miami. And they went to Las Vegas. They were working out in the Mayweather gym. They Instagram lived it. And I was like, man, I want to talk to Tarver about this. Like, what's going on here? Get the story from him and see what this perspective is. So we tracked down the Magic Man this week and discussed what he is doing with Evander Holyfield, training him for a Mike Tyson trilogy, and what his new ties are with Miami's own Harold King Calderon. So here is our conversation with the Magic Man, Antonio Tarver. He joined us earlier this week on Tobin and Leroy. What really sparked me this week was he was training one of our own down here from Miami, our guy Harold Calderon, the King. You guys have partnered up now. Like, how did this partnership come to be, you and Harold mixing it up and you training him?
Well, you know, man, I'm a believer that, you know, things happen organically sometime, and, you know, God just works in mysterious ways. But I was down there working with Holyfield and Klitschko down at the Heavyweight Factory, and I'm moving around Miami like I normally do. And I'm coming out of Walmart or something, and then we're dealing with this pandemic. You know, everybody got their mask and stuff on. It's hard to recognize anybody. But for some reason, I'm looking at this guy, and as close as I get to him, I'm recognizing, like, that's Harold Calderon, the King, right? So I'm like, man, what's up? And the first thing he say, man, where you been? I'm waiting on you. I'm ready. I'm ready. I say, you ready? I say, all right, well, this is what we're doing. You know, and about 6-7 months ago, I formed my management team, Signature Punch. And we signed one of the brightest heavyweights in the game, a young guy by the name of Dunston, you know, and Big Taz Cortez Dunston from Baltimore, tough streets of Baltimore, I might add.
Yep.
But he relocated to Tampa, and the first time I saw this guy, I knew something was special about him. So we signed him. He was our first signee, and then I run into Harold. And the reason why I know Harold so well is when I was training down there with my great trainer, Orlando Cuellar, he was also training Harold. I was bringing my son down. He was training with Harold, sparring with Harold. They were both getting into shape, getting great work. I always knew Harold was a special fighter. It's one of those things that, you know, sometimes the great fighters, the good fighters, don't get the break or the opportunity they deserve because they're not in the click or they're not in the know when it comes to the business of boxing.
Right.
So with that being said, you know, I've been in the game some 22 years. I've had, you know, a lot of success. I've had an opportunity to work with a lot of the networks, ESPN, Showtime, Fox. You know, I've had some type of affiliation with practically all of them, from either working as a commentator or either fighting as a boxer. So using those relationships, I've been able to formulate my management team, who I believe is going to be, I think, one of the, you know, best management companies in the business of boxing, because I know what these fighters need. I know what it takes, and I'm trying to give these fighters opportunities. And I know once they get the opportunities, their dream can come true just as well as mine came true. It's all about getting the opportunities. So those are the doors that I'm trying to break down. Open that floodgate and give these deserving guys the opportunity. And I think Harold, I believe, is the best kept secret in boxing right now, being that he's in the best weight class, the welterweight division, the old same weight class that Mayweather owned and dominated for years. Now you got guys like Bud Crawford, Errol Spence, and I think Harold Calderon's name should be mentioned in those lights. He's 22-0. He's with 15 knockouts and without, you know, the hype and without the press. He's done it the hard way, and I think he deserves the opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I've you know, been to like a half dozen of Harold's fights down here. The guy packs every building that they have him on the marquee down here locally. An entire building, you know, Chaney. That's one of the hardest things to do on your own, Antonio, is just getting these local venues all filled up. So What do you think that secret sauce is to get him recognized? You were a guy who was heavily avoided a lot in your career. Wasn't the guy that everybody wanted to tape. You know, Southpaw. Nobody likes taking on the Southpaws either. Just like Harold is. So, what do you think it is? Like, what is that thing that can help boxers take that next level? That secret sauce that makes them go from A to B. That next level.
Well, I want to definitely be the connector. And that's what I think is missing. I'm going to connect Harold with the people that I know can put him on that platform, and give him a fair shot, an opportunity, where the deck isn't stacked, and he's not fighting uphill, so that's what we're going to do. We went out to Vegas just recently. I sat down with the money team, Floyd Mayweather. Harold was right there, and we ate dinner, and we talked business. And those are the type of connections that I'm trying to bring and to make a difference in these young guys' career. Let's go to the horse's mouth. The people that are making the things, making the game go. The people that are making things happen in boxing from a network standpoint. And that's all Harold's missing. The networks. That's all he needs. The backing.
Tarver, I want to ask you this because you talk about not only training people but managing them also. How hard is it, being a great fighter that you were, to take a young fighter and be able to train him, understanding he might not be able to do the things you did?
Well, you know what? I'm not asking him to do the things I did. I'm asking him to find the things that's within him. His story could be totally different than mine, and I'm not trying to duplicate anything I did because that's in the record books, I'm trying to show the world that I can be instrumental in developing champions and stars in boxing. I think when you look at my mindset, the things that I had to overcome, I think that in itself speaks volume. And this is the type of confidence I'm trying to instill in anybody that I'm training. They have to believe in themselves wholeheartedly. It's not gonna come easy. You shouldn't expect it to come easy. But if you get that opportunity, it only comes once in a lifetime. You gotta cash in on it. I would love to see Harold on that stage against a Bud Crawford, against someone like an Errol Spence, so that on that one given night, he can show the world that they all slept on, I think, one of the best fighters in the world today. That's Harold Calderon.
We're talking to Antonio Tarver. Now, can you tell us about the connection that happened with you and Holyfield and Klitschko? Because that was, everybody was seeing the Evander comeback and, people are pumped about all the legends kind of getting back into it. But I was like, hold on, who's that damn in the ring? Is that Tarver holding mitts for him? Is like, is he getting him ready? So like, how did that connection come underway? And give us kind of the scoop of it, man. What is Evander thinking about with this comeback and Klitschko too?
Well, I have to take my hat off to Evander Holyfield manager, Chris Lawrence. So if you are familiar with the boxing business in the Miami area, he's a real staple in that. He works with the Hard Rock. He's promoted some of the biggest shows down there. And we connected. And, all I wanted was an opportunity. Chris brought me in. Holyfield and I worked beautifully together. And realistically, I personally would never put anyone in harm's way. And that's not what we do as trainers, because we know this is a hurt business. And we know that people can get seriously hurt in this business. That's why four-time world heavyweight champion Evander Holyfield understands that, and he's getting his body in shape for whatever. But right now, he's just looking for an opportunity to do something great with a great fighter like Mike Tyson. You see, Mike Tyson is back at it. Both of these guys are looking phenomenal. And it just shows you, man, that age is nothing but a number. And, we're about spirit, and we're about, that soul. And these guys are putting it all out there. I trained with Evander, and I'm telling you, man, I was impressed. Because he did so much and he just kept going. I mean, he still has desire. And I'm like, wow. And I'm looking at myself and I'm like, I'm a young 51. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, he inspired me something. You know what I mean? I'm like, I never thought I'd be, like motivated to train again and do all that. But watching Evander Holyfield on the beach, running hills, lifting weights, putting it in. I had to look in the mirror like, man, hey, what are you doing? Like, I'm healthy and strong, but I'm really comfortable on the other side. But to be in Evander Holyfield's corner, a legend, living legend, it's just another, one of those feathers in my cap. And I'm excited, man. If we get that opportunity, I'm going to be right there for him.
Do you think that that is like the A plan for both of these guys? Because everybody, like you said, everybody's seen the Tyson video. You know, everybody's coming for Tyson. Like that's everybody's like from John Bones Jones in MMA to bare knuckle fighting, offering him $20 million to everybody wants to see the trilogy with Holyfield. Like, what do you think is A1? Like, is A1 you think Evander Holyfield? What do you feel it's going to be?
You know what? I think they deserve each other, you know, because, you know, it would be unrealistic to think that Mike Tyson could step in the ring with these young, big, strong, youthful guys today. But if, you know, guys like Holyfield can get in shape and like Tyson can get in shape, who wouldn't want to see those guys, those legendary fighters, step back in there and you know, give us a peek of what it was like back in the day, you know, when, you know, both of these guys really, you know, really garnered all of boxing's attention. Mike Tyson, Holyfield. I mean, it was for about 10 years they dominated the sport, just those two names alone. Yeah. So, yeah, it would be great for them. And then, you know, I don't think anyone would get hurt in an exhibition between two guys that are similar age, similar experience. They both been to the mountaintop. I mean, they'll give us a flash of what it was like back in the day, but I think both to be safe, to say that I don't think anybody can get hurt in that type of an exhibition. So I'm one that's all for that. Anything other than that, I don't know where the success rate could be when it comes down to our health. And that's just being 100. And I've always been open and honest about that.
Since you got the trainer's hat on, speaking with the current day heavyweight picture, Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder, they're going to have their trilogy sometime at the end of the year. What did you make of the rematch? Because I was one where I thought, like, Deontay going into that second fight, he got him down twice in the first one. He only needs that small window. And he's had that success with that power so much. Obviously, it's easy to become reliant upon. Do you think he could find it within himself to get Tyson Fury down in the third fight? Or did we just see another side of Tyson Fury to now he's not only outboxing him, now he's bullying him in the rematch? Like, do you think there's any window for Deontay to get him, or is this Tyson's show now?
I mean, you know, everybody's entitled to make adjustments. That's why I personally don't like to watch films of anybody that I'm fighting, because the last time I watched a film was of Eric Harding, and I didn't think what I saw in that film that this guy could even compete with me. Well, lo and behold, I found out the hard way that not only could he compete, but he kind of gave it to me the first fight, broke my jaw and everything. You know, thank God for rematches. I was able to come back and vindicate myself. Now, I say rematch because the rematch has always already happened. When you look at boxing, over the years of boxing, the rematch really tells the tale of both fighters because they've had a chance to be in the ring with each other. They know what to expect, you know. But they go back to the drawing board and they have an opportunity to make and get everything right that the mistakes that they made, they get a chance to fix it. That rematch really showed, I think, who's the better fighter. I think he bullied him. He knew he could bully him because it was so easy to box him. So he took it another step further. Let me go ahead and see, can I just manhandle Deontay Wilder? And it worked. And now I think Deontay Wilder has to be honest with himself. I think that's the only way he can fix this, is be honest with himself. That's a hard thing to do when you got so many people around you that's being, and I'm not saying this is the case, dishonest. But at least not letting him or allowing him to truly look in the mirror from a trainer standpoint, a management standpoint, even from a promoter standpoint. Somebody has to be honest with Deontay Wilder, somebody that he respects. You know, I told it like it was after the first fight. It looked like he was a fish out of water, like he never even had any experience in boxing. This is a guy that was a bronze medal in the Olympics. This is a guy that's a heavyweight champion, undefeated. And it looks like he didn't know the basic fundamentals of the game. So that's where Deontay Wilder is missing, fundamentals. And all you need to do is sharpen up the basic fundamentals in order to work off of that and give yourself a chance. You got to be able to know that you can't back up standing tall. They teach that in the first week of boxing. Never lean back. And he's doing all of these, you know, making all of these mistakes, and Tyson Fury is making him pay. I'm totally against the trilogy right now because I just don't think Wilder has that type of teacher in there that can speak his language and get through to this kid and let him understand that, man, power don't mean nothing if you can't land it effectively. It means nothing. So, you know, with that being said, I think he has to get back to the drawing board. I offered my services. I said, hey, bring me in, man. You don't have to fire anyone. Just let me come in and give you the information that you need. They were told that no one called or nothing. And I told his manager before the rematch exactly what he would need going into that rematch. And I got the email that I sent him. I can show it to you on paper. Everything I said came true in the rematch. I haven't heard back from JD's. So that tells me right there, these guys are representing these fighters, but they're not putting their fighter in the, giving their fighter the best chance to win. It don't make no sense to me, man. It really don't.
Before we get you out of here, it's like, how much are you enjoying this this role, the teaching thing? Like, I mean, we talked to you like when you were, you know, doing with your son's career, and I enjoy watching you guys on IG Live, your sessions. Like, how much is this new role? You got new guys coming in now, like having almost like a stable. Like, what's that like, and how much are you enjoying this part of your career?
Man, I'm enjoying it because, you know, every time, you know, what am I going to do with all this knowledge and experience that I got? I've been blessed to have some of the greatest trainers. Jimmy Williams, he trained me when I was 10 years old, taught me how to fight out of the triangle, explained to me how important defense is, you know. And so then Buddy McGirt, one of the top trainers today, led me in my professional career. We knocked out Roy Jones together. Then Orlando Cuellar, who's trained several champions. All I'm saying is, I've had the fortunate ability to be trained by some of the best teachers in the game. And I'm a part of all those guys. And I have the communication skills to help these fighters. I don't need nothing, man. You ain't got to fire no trainer. Bring me in. Let me work. And that's it. Let me give you the game plan. Show you technically what you should be doing, how you should be doing it. You still got to fight the fight. I can't fight for you. But having the information and understanding, it's half of the problem. I mean, it's half of the solution. You know, understanding, knowing is half the battle, basically is what I'm trying to say. And I feel like I know when it comes down to boxing. I don't know it all. But through my experiences, through my trainers, I think I can touch on a little bit of everything when it comes to boxing. And the bottom line is to get out of the game with all your marbles, with all your faculties. That's success. When you've been in the game 22 years and you've never been cut, you've never been knocked out, come on, man, I must know something. I must be doing something right. And that's what I'm trying to pass on to the guys that's coming up behind me.
Well, looking forward to you with watching our guy, Harold. We wish you guys nothing but success. We always
appreciate man.
Time from the Magic Man. He's
I can't wait.
Hey, and I got to keep my golf club sharp, so I'm going to get back on the greens, man.
You know
so
I'm coming. Come down there. All right.
Antonio, thanks for the time.
Hey, guys, I appreciate you guys. And listen, continue to follow Harold the King Calderon, man. We're going to make Miami special. He's Mr. 305 to me, man, and we behind him. We're going to get these lessons, and we're going to get these opportunities. I want to bring the next fight to Miami. I want to bring it national TV. That's what we're working on. Walking so we're going to – yeah, we're going to blow it up, man. We ready.
All right.
Thanks,
Antonio. All right, man, y'all be good. God bless. Right. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Always love talking to that guy, man. And it was great having him join Tobin and Leroy this week. You guys can, of course, hear us every single weekday from 6 to 10 a.m. We'll be back on Monday, back in the saddle with Leroy for this shortened holiday week. But can't wait to be back and talking shenanigans with you guys. We're back with more on Fighter's Fury after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Fighter's Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Thanks again to Antonio Tarver for joining us this week. A couple of the news and notes from this week as we found out that it is official that Kamaru Usman is going to be training in Colorado for this upcoming fight, UFC 251. I spoke with Lex McMahon at Titan FC this week, and I think I mentioned this earlier in the show, but he was just saying how weird a fight that's going to be. I've heard from Sugar Rashad Evans, everybody who's kind of tied into that Hard Knocks 365 in Fort Lauderdale, the Henry Hooft break off of what was the Black Zillions and all that type of stuff, that whole trickle down, that pod,
a lot of people are saying this is going to be a weird fight, man. That this is going to be it's impossible for it not to be strange with those guys going through three different gyms together. And so it did seem like Kamaru was going to be the guy who was going to go, which I found a little bit strange because I would have thought that, you know, the champ is probably got priority, but also, you know, maybe Gilbert's not in a position where he can leave. You know, that's his gym. That's what he's used to training. And if you're Kamaru and you want that special attention, I think that was his quote this week, that he wanted a place that could sharpen him specifically instead of have a bunch of people there. You know, it's a very popular gym. A lot of people train that down here. So yeah, I get it. We've seen that break off before. That was, that where people have gone off into other gyms, very familiar with like the Team Alpha Male thing where, you know, the TJ Dillashaw breakup. This seems a much more cordial than that, than what was going on there. The interesting thing though is Henry Hooft has stepped out. He's not going to coach either guy in this matchup, that he's going to stay at the gym. And if you're at the gym, he'll help you, but he's not going to be, he's not going to be training either one of these guys for this fight or cornering these guys for this fight. So it's going to be a weird one for sure. I still think it's going to be a fantastic fight. Look, all the BS around it with not getting the fight that we wanted, which was, of course, Masvidal versus Usman and, you know, the rivalry and all that type of stuff. You went from having this high money, crazy rivalry between Usman and Masvidal to less money, friendly fire fight between Usman and Gilbert Burns. It's just, it's got to mess with you. And, yeah, Lex was even saying this week, he's like, yeah, this is, I think that can almost mess with Usman's head a little bit, because you went from having a fight that you think is all the way up to one level and then you're kind of all the way down. So, you know, can he maintain? I think he will. I think that, that he's a guy where it just seems like he's been doing the same thing in the cage now for, you know, what feels like a good 4-fight window here, where he's just dominated for 5 straight rounds every single time he goes out there. And can he do that to Gilbert? You know, Gilbert has such a strong skill set on the ground. I don't know, but I don't think that whether it does or it doesn't, I don't think that it's going to affect him where he's going to be mentally shook because of the situation. I don't think that's the case. On the boxing side of things, had a couple of announcements this week. We have a heavyweight matchup that was put down. Daniel Dubois versus Joe Joyce. That is scheduled for October 24th at the O2 Arena, according to Frank Warren. So you have that going down. The other one that was announced this week is that we had Dillian White. He has his next fight, and that is going to be Alexander Povetkin, which is a fun fight. You know, I think, I saw some boxing reaction this week of people. It's going to be on DAZN, by the way. That's still a thing. I saw some reaction from some pundits in boxing, like, oh, this is what I'm talking about. This is, you know, the fighters fighting each other. No, it's not. I mean, like, no, it's not. Now, it's probably where Dillian White should be fighting. It should be fighting guys who have fought for the title. Keep yourself busy. You're fighting a veteran dude. But it's not like, oh my God, I can't believe Dillian White's throwing it all out on the, you know, if he was fighting Luis Ortiz, all right, I'd hear you out on that one. But, you know, Alexander Povetkin, you know, Povetkin had his moments against Anthony Joshua. But, you know, AJ weathered that and then put it on him. I think that with White, you know, what could he really, I think White needs to come out here truly, sincerely. He needs to come out with, like, because he talks so much. He talks a lot, dude. I think that he needs to come out here. He needs a Wilder Povetkin. He needs to hit him with a shot that just is like, whoa. One they could play on the highlight reels, because nobody's into this guy fighting Tyson Fury for the WBC title. And I saw, what was this quote from Suleiman this week, this WBC guy? He goes out and he says, we will not make Tyson Fury the franchise champion until he defends against his mandatory. He says, the WBC has consistently confirmed that the mandatory bout between WBC world champion must take place with mandatory challenger and interim champion Dillian White. It must take place after Fury Wilder 3. Under those circumstances, in order to that place, WBC does not consider a request to elevate anyone in the heavyweight division to franchise champion before the division's mandatory obligations. I'm telling you right now, I swear to God, this is what Tyson Fury should do. He should take that green belt and he should throw it at the feet of Suleiman and be like, good, here, take it. Who cares? You think I need that? I mean, like, it's so stupid what we're doing here with this. He has to go. Think about this. The WBC, with their interim champion, whatever the F that guy, because has Tyson Fury fought less than Dillian White over the last, over the last time period? Has he fought a lot more than Deontay Wilder? I don't think he has. I haven't seen Deontay Wilder be inactive. Why do you have an interim champion? What is that? First of all, first and foremost. Second of all, really? I can't be franchise champion? Oh, good, because it's a fake thing. Sorry, I can't be something that you just made up. Literally making up belts out here. Oh, sorry. Oh, I can't be under your umbrella. I can't just walk around with the green belt acting like, what are we talking about here? So yeah. And apparently we have news of another comeback. This has been all the rage in boxing. You have, the Mike Tyson thing. That's numero uno, Evander Holyfield. We talked to Tarver earlier about that. But Oscar De La Hoya, he now says that he is seriously considering a comeback fight. He says, I actually want to see what Tyson does first. I have been working out. I've been training, staying in shape. I'm obviously not in fighting shape yet to go 12 rounds, but I'm sure I can get there. We'll see. I want to see Tyson perform, see how his reflexes are, see if he can go past 3-4 rounds, and then I'll make my decision. He says, you look at my last fight against Pacquiao. I fought at 160, came all the way down to 147 to try and beat Pacquiao, who was just coming up, who was faster than hell. I couldn't pull the trigger, and I overtrained. My muscles were so lean, walking like a zombie. Truthfully, let's see. No. He's 47 years old. He says he wouldn't fight Canelo if he did a comeback fight. Maybe he should fight Ryan Garcia. Maybe he should fight them both. Fight them both on the same night. I don't know. There's something about De La Hoya coming back that doesn't speak to me the same way that the Tyson, because the Tyson thing, one, Tyson's always been the circus, you know, it's always been a freak show with Tyson. He was a freak show when he was the youngest heavyweight champion ever. He was a freak show in the prime of his career. He was a freak show after the career ended, the face tattoo, the press conference clip, everything with Tyson was just the extra stuff out of the ring added to the aura, added to the story. So it just seems appropriate for him to come back at 53 years old and try it. Why not? Especially when he looks the way that he does compared to what he did look like. With Oscar, you know, I just don't feel like people are going to... Now, look, he was one of the biggest pay-per-view draws of all time. He was the golden boy, and he was great. But there's something about the heavyweight old guys coming back that I think is just... It draws a little bit more than Oscar would. Like, if Oscar was going to come back and fight, I feel like Oscar has to come back and he does have to fight like a Canelo or have a grudge match with one of his fighters or something like that. Him just coming back, I don't know, man. Like, who does he do it against? Like, what's the storyline there? You know what I mean? And it's different to get these guys down to, whatever. Would he be fighting at what? You know, would he try and get down to 160? Is he going to try and fight at light heavyweight? What would he be fighting at? I don't know. But, there's something about the Oscar De La Hoya comeback that doesn't speak to me quite like the Tyson or Evander one does. Everybody have a great rest of your week. If you missed any of the show, download the podcast, radio.com. It's available there. You could subscribe to the show on YouTube as well. All those good things. Thank you guys for tuning in. And we will talk to you next time.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.